This is what real sport sounds like.
He's gone round the goalkeeper, he shoots, and he scores!
This is Talk Sport.
Hawksby, Annie Jacobs here on Talk Sport. Now we take you back to 1989, the first game of the season. And at Old Trafford, Michael Knight and the prospective new owner of the club took to the field in tracksuit top, short socks, boots, did some keepy-uppies for the cameras, and to smack one into the net, if memory serves, at the Stretford end, saluted the crowds, got a good reception. And then after that, the deal, sadly, from his perspective, didn't, and maybe from the club's perspective as well, we'll come on to that in a moment, didn't happen. And Michael was kind of written off as a bit of a Walter Mitty figure, really, that this was some kind of ego trip, and kind of was seen in some quarters rather unfairly, as something we'll come on to in a moment, as a bit of a Walter Mitty figure. But the balance has been redressed, I think, over recent years. And the new book, Visionary, Manchester United, Michael Knight and the Football Revolution, 89 to 2019, by Philip Vine, is out now. We're very pleased to say the subject of the book, Michael Knight, is with us. Good to see you, Michael.
Good to see you too, and thank you very much indeed for having me.
When you look back, I mean, at the time, obviously, you know, you were a serious, successful businessman. Manchester United and Martin Edwards wouldn't have come to you otherwise to take the club on. So did it hurt to be painted as this kind of Walter Mitty figure afterwards?
Well, I was a young man, and clearly at that stage in my life, I didn't know the whys and wherefores of how the media operate. And so perhaps I set myself up as a hostage to fortune, really. But there was serious logic about my introduction, very unorthodox introduction, which could be described as showmanship or buffoonery, whichever your perspective
quite
is.
Quite
skillful. Not bad. I was pleased to say the play that the fans thought they'd bought a new player. I take that as a great compliment. But no, the logic was to bridge the gap between the boardroom and the fans on the terraces, because people forget. I mean, it is, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
They forget what that division was between the management, the executive management, and the supporters. Martin Edwards would be the first to admit that he wasn't the most popular chairman. The Edwards family had been in charge for a long time. And let's be frank, they'd massively underachieved on the field of play.
Yeah, it wasn't a great environment at United at the time, at that stage, was it really? The crowds were dwindling and stuff, weren't they?
You fit it in one, Paul. You know, gates had fallen to 22,000 at some home games. They had not won the Football League for, what, more than 20 years. And they were simply seen as a massive underachieving football club. I wanted to show the fans, look, here I am. I'm a man of humble beginnings. I'd made a bob or two, enough to buy Manchester United. And yeah. I wanted
30
show them,
million they wanted for it, though, didn't they?
I paid 10 million quid for Martin's shares. That right. secured me the majority shareholding. I did promise another 10 for the Stretford end and another 10 million to spend on players.
Right.
So you're right, Andy, that would have been a cool
thing. So how close did you come?
I came more than close. I had the money, hence this book.
Yeah.
For 30 years, I have to say, I'd never met the writer, Philip Vine. Lovely chap. He wrote to me at Old Trafford in 1992. He wrote a beautiful letter. And I thought, you know, I've had enough publicity now to last me a lifetime. I really don't want any more. And I really don't want to do a book. After all, the great, wonderful Hugh McAvenny had offered to write the story. Those in the sports world will know all about Hugh McAvenny.
Yeah, yeah.
Sadly, recently passed away. But Hugh had offered to write the story and some other very well-respected journalists. And I always said, no, I'll leave it. Philip Vine wrote to me a beautiful letter. I invited him for lunch. I thought, what a nice man. A really nice man. He came over as a man of integrity and straightforwardness. And we had a chat. I said, do me a piece, which he did. He wrote it beautifully. Look, Philip is a Cambridge graduate. He's a historian. He's no shop egg. He's a clever man. And I said, you know, if I ever do decide to tell the truth about what really happened at Old Trafford, I think he's the man to do it.
Yeah.
God bless him. We shook hands and I said, one condition, Philip, you will never... I gave him my diaries and my legal papers. I said, you'll never publish anything without the green light from me. And God bless the man. He said, that.
So why now then, Michael? Why have you decided that this is the time to write it?
Well, I've not written. I've had no jurisdiction over the content of the book. It is very much Philip Vine's book. Mm-hmm. He is the author. I agreed to help him market it via the publishers. Of course, that goes without saying. But his conclusions, and he sifted the evidence. The reason, Paul, was this. When my granddaughter was coming up to 8 and I was tucking her into bed, she said to me, I'm known as Grandad Mike, too. I've got 6 grandchildren.
Right.
Grandad Mike, are you the football man, Michael Knight?
That's interesting.
And, you know, but she said it with all the penetrative, investigative tone of a journalist. I thought, good God.
Where'd she got that from?
Well, these kids, you see, as you know, if you've got children of your own, they live in the digital space. They're internet savvy. My 3-year-old is better than me on the internet. And I thought, good God. And there's been so much rubbish written about their granddad over the years. And I thought, you know, I think it is time. So when Philip then, he used to phone me regularly, although we did lose contact for about 15 years. I think he got the shock of his life when I said, I'm ready.
Right.
Whatever you've written,
yeah,
you can publish. And hence the book.
It's then, a very interesting question, Paul, from Michael Crick, who's a political editor, but also an expert on Manchester United.
Oh, very much so. And the expert.
He makes a very interesting comment about you in his book in 2002. He said, there's a strong case for saying Michael Knighton had a more influential role in the recent history of Manchester United than many of the club's managers, directors, or footballers.
Because,
that's a different way of looking at
history.
And
we should point out that little cameo in 89 on the pitch wasn't your only involvement with the club. You stayed for another 3 years and you were involved in the club. And that's a moment with Sir Bobby Charlton when you leave, giving you a kind of a fantastic send-off.
I never had a cross word with any of them, really, at Manchester United. And Martin Edwards, you know, Martin's had a lot of criticism. To be fair to Martin, you know, yes, he did undersell the club in 1989. I valued it at £150 million to myself and my own advisors. So to get it for 10 million quid, yes, of course, it was the deal of the century. But Martin, you know, shares were changing hands at £5 and £6. Martin asked me for 20. So the criticism, Martin, that he did a very bad deal for himself, well, hang on, he got 2 and 3 times more than the shares were changing hands for at the time. I gave the board a blueprint, often confused sometimes by Martin as a long-form report, which you had to do to prove that the club was clean and you could report to all shareholders that you were buying a club with no hidden skeletons. And I gave them a blueprint, and this book really is about that blueprint. It's printed in the back of the book, and it was inevitable, Paul, Andy, what was going to happen to this industry. Anyone who'd done... Remember, my background is education.
Yeah.
So you didn't need to be that clever, really, to look at what was around the corner.
And this was pre the Premier League, of course, formation of the Premier. Only just, but only a few years, but
absolutely.
Still. Could you see the way TV was going to move in there?
Well, if you read the blueprint, you'll see. And, you know, 5th of February 1989 at 6 p.m, Sky TV was launched. And anyone worth their salt with a little bit of imagination... by the way, the title Visionary is not mine. I should say that. It's the writers and the publishers. But anyone with a little bit of vision and a little bit of clear logical understanding will say, hang on, terrestrial television, it hasn't got simply the global reach that it should have. This satellite television could now promote the greatest sporting product, to use a commercial term, but it is a sporting product around the world. And I did my homework. And I predicted my blueprint that it's not £3 million for terrestrial television, then 12 million. Then they thought, 44 million. I said it's worth billions. In 1989, I said, you wait till Sky Television really does mature. This product will be sold for billions. That's why I was called a Walter Mitty.
Why did you not? We know you went to Carlisle. Did you attempt to buy another First Division club? And that would have been an option, wouldn't it? If you couldn't fulfil this vision with Manchester United, could you have not done it elsewhere and sort of shared in that explosion of the sport?
Well, that's a very good question, Paul. I think two things. You're absolutely. I was there for 3 years at Old Trafford, and I saw the commercial initiatives build on the initiatives are already there, but I wanted to take them completely to another level and create Manchester United into the greatest sporting brand on the planet, which it still is, despite the football team underperforming for the last two or three seasons, it's still got a tremendous pull. For example, the latest shirt deal, if you can believe the rumours, and I'm sure they're true.
Yeah, we hear today, yeah.
You know, Hare's offering, I mean, they're the fourth largest manufacturer of white goods in the world. They're China's most famous or valued brand. So it wouldn't take a genius to realise that if you put China's greatest white goods manufacturing brand on the greatest sporting brand over their shirts, then what is 70 million quid a season when you're turning over 16.2
billion? They are still a huge pull, aren't they? We should talk a bit about, a bit tight for time, but we'd like to talk about your time at Carlisle, because you went to Carlisle, you did own the club, and then for a while managed the club, but there was an infamous moment, a famous moment you presided over when Jimmy Glass got the goal that kept you up.
Two things. Now, the only reason that that wonderful little diamond of a little club in the far northern territory is not mentioned in this book is because I am actually writing my own book about Carlisle.
Okay.
That's coming out next year, and that was my only condition.
Manchester United.
I'll deal with Carlisle.
Yeah.
I owned that football club for a decade, virtually to the day. 10 years at Brunton Park. We had 5-6 brilliant years. Went to Wembley twice, won a runaway league championship. It was fabulous. Then it turns sour, as it often does at that level, if you're underperforming on the pitch. And I could give you all sorts of reasons why we began to underperform. And it was a shame how it ended at Carlisle. Of course, I was criticised for making so much money at Carlisle in the early years. Headline, I think, in the local paper, Knighton makes more than Liverpool. Why isn't he spending it on players?
Yeah.
Which is always the...
Yeah, of course.
Always the gamut. Yeah. 10 wonderful years... Jimmy Glass, you know, I think it's still, isn't the 10th most famous goal in the world?
Yeah, it's a great fairy tale football moment, isn't it? Yeah.
And, you know, it was a wonderful occasion. That sounds almost a juxtaposed position to say, how can it be wonderful when you survive by an on-loan goalkeeper scoring in the 95th minute? But I think I said after that fabulous day, I don't only just believe in... that the moon is made of green cheese, Medusa, flying saucers and UFOs and goodness knows what. I also believe in on-loan goalkeepers who score winning goals in the 95th minute. It was a great occasion.
We've got running out of time. Does the book mention your artwork? Your art career?
Do you know...
That's what you do now, Michael, isn't it? Artist and poet?
Do you know, I've always been in love with art. Ever since... Well, since my school days. And that was always my thing. But, you know, when you get involved with Manchester United, your name becomes associated with that.
Yeah.
I hope, before I die, my legacy is my art rather than the football. Really.
On the pitch. Couple of things. What would you think those shares would be worth now? You probably argue with your blueprint, as we say, which is in the book, the club could have made even more money, and so your shares would be worth more than they would have done.
Well, I can tell you exactly what my holding would be worth, because I was offered by Philip Green, now Sir Philip Green, I should say, and I know he's had some bad publicity recently. I know nothing about that, don't know the whys and wherefores, so I can't make any value judgments. But let me tell you, Philip Green was one of the few people who saw the value of that deal almost instantaneously, and he offered me a banker's draft of 7 million quid plus 22% uplift, which would have been about £770 million. Oh. The club has just been valued at $3.2 billion May this year in Forbes magazine. So, yeah, for 10 million quid, not a bad investment.
And what do you think, finally, the way the Glazers are running the business now?
Well, look, it's always a difficult... it's a difficult situation when fans see how much interest they're paying, because it was a very highly leveraged deal. They purchased 2005, they paid 790 million quid, most of it leveraged funds. For those at home, leverage just means you're borrowing money to buy it.
And they used the income at United.
Absolutely. So they have sucked out some £60 million in interest charges and what have you. And obviously they've paid themselves some financial reward too. Always difficult to reconcile with fans, because they would want to see it spent on players. But, you know, look, they bought Maguire, £80 million, most expensive defender in the world. Paul Podger, you know, this is big money. So clearly, if they were not investing in the team, then the criticisms are very legitimate. But to be fair, they are investing in the team. It just hasn't worked since Alex retired, the great Alex Ferguson, since he retired. They've lost their way.
What's your relationship like with him? We are running out of time. It's fascinating.
Good. You know, Alex did his thing. I did mine. Alex came to see me. I'd been there just less than 10 days. He said, can I buy Gary Pallister? I was the chairman-elect. It was my decision. I said, go and break the British transfer record. Without Pallister, we're going nowhere. And he did. Yeah. Martin Edwards refused to go more than 1.8 million. I said, go and spend what it takes. And he did. We got Gary for 2.3 million.
And that worked out quite well, I think it's
worked
fair to say.
Worked out very well.
Yeah. And what sort of reaction, Vani Marsh, do you get from Manchester United fans now when you meet them who take you back to that day?
Do you know, it's extraordinary, extremely positive. Mm. Because time is, you know, a great historian, isn't it?
Yeah.
It reveals all. And I think once the showmanship was explained and the reasoning behind it, I get nothing but an excellent reception, which I'm grateful for.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, it's been great to meet you. Thank you very much. I'm sure the United fans especially will love to hear the story. They'd love to read the blueprint, what you had in mind back in 89. It's published by Pitch. It's called Visionary. It's written by Philip Vine. Manchester United, Michael Knighton and the Football Revolution, 1989 to 2019.
And just before I go, great programme. I recommend everyone to listen to
it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.